This is a People First Radio podcast.
In Victoria, Solid Outreach had recently been offering people living on the street a space to store their belongings. While that space is no longer available, the need very much remains, according to Solid's Fred Cameron.
I'm Fred Cameron. I work at Solid Outreach, senior management, housing, pretty much every aspect of the organization.
And for a little while, Solid was offering people space to store their belongings. Can you tell me a little bit about that and what happened?
We had been running a drop-in space, which was open to about 40 people, which was to give daytime sheltering to the 30 that stay in our shelter, which is a block away. And then that site closed down, but we opened up a storage facility, hoping to give people a base to store their stuff while we helped them to get into more adequate housing. That ran for about 5 or 6 months, but it had a firm end date when we opened it. So we were hoping to find another place, but I think we're just kind of maxed out at the moment with all of the other projects we've got going. So hopefully we can continue that in the future.
Can you tell me about what the impact of the service was while it was running?
Yeah, well, we had storage for approximately 36 or 38 people. So we had 30 people who were using it as their home base 7 days a week. Most of them we would see daily. And then we had an additional 6 spaces that we reserved for people in emergency situations. So if somebody was going to the hospital, if they went to detox, they had to go to Vancouver to a funeral or whatever it was, we gave emergency one-time use of the facility, and then they would return and take their belongings. But it allowed people to move around during the daytime. So, you know, we think of stuff as being something that will give us freedom, happiness, and all of the stuff that goes along with material belongings. But when you're out on the street, if you have too much stuff, it means you're tethered to your things. You can't go inside to use a washroom without risk of it being confiscated and thrown in the garbage. People are stealing from one another. They don't mean any harm most of the time. They think of it as being found, but it's very difficult to get people into healthcare, into housing, even to enjoy the programming at our other sites. We don't have the capacity to allow people to bring all of their stuff, meaning they just don't come here. So the ones who are able to use it, and it allows them to move around and take care of themselves, whether that's social, healthcare, and the impacts on people's mental health, it's undeniable after a short period of time when people are able to freely engage in the community.
What kinds of things were people using the storage space to keep safe?
Yeah, we had only a few rules, just, you know, nothing like wet clothing, as an example. We wouldn't allow, and we would help people to clean that up. But they had clothing, backpacks, skateboards. People had their personal documents, so, you know, passport or applications, that kind of thing. Some people even had, you know, photographs that they had was the last thing they had from their family, as an example. So some of these belongings were incredibly important. Oftentimes it's just, you know, if people are carrying 3 suitcases, it just allowed them to leave 2 suitcases there, again, meaning they can get around. So we saw everything imaginable, really, over a very short period of time. Canned food right up to family heirlooms. So
the service is no longer able to operate. Right now, if someone is in Victoria and they don't have a regular place to sleep, what is the situation like? What are their options for keeping control of some possessions?
Yeah, I'm not certain of across the whole city how much there is, but I think there are a few storage units that are open to people that are attached to other shelters. So you can store a small amount of stuff. And then there are small storage places downtown. There are a few places where you can pay for a locker. But there's really nothing out there for the people that are walking along Pandora or Douglas or living in an encampment. That's one of the key areas that we see needs to be addressed right away.
What could addressing that look like? What steps could be taken?
I had thought when we opened that one, just knowing the community, just the 900 block alone, I had thought we could operate three of those C-cans without a problem filling it up. We have a shelter again that's just a couple of blocks away, and we're going to be opening another transitional place that's hoping to move people along to create a continuum. So people are able to get first just sheltering to get them through the night, and then moving into another shelter that's a little bit more stable, where we have supports and helping people with goal setting, recovery, whatever it is they're looking to do. And then we're helping them to get into housing, whether that's supportive housing or market rent. But until there's a continuum with support along the way, you know, we're going to keep putting people into housing where they're set up to fail. And this, the storage is a huge part of it. I can't really describe it without taking an hour, but you know, there's a few things, and that's belongings, pets, and people who are in a partnership. Those three situations create barriers that have prevented hundreds of people from getting housed in the few years that I've been working in the field.
Can you tell me more about that idea of someone is maybe offered a service or a place to be housed? How do belongings get in the way of that?
I think it's very difficult to get housed directly from the street. So first off, people are moved into sheltering, and then they're in the BC housing system. So we have to get contact with people. We have housing workers who are able to see how they're living, what their needs are, what kind of impacts they might have on their neighbors. You know, we offer solutions as if, you know, it's happening in a vacuum and it works on paper. And then when that doesn't work, we just abandon it and come up with something new. And we need to form a continuum. And that's step one, is getting into sheltering. So having a place for people to put their belongings allows them to stay in a MAT program, which simply does not have the capacity. The place that we operate down the street from there is down two flights of stairs into a church basement. So there are limitations as to, you know, what we can offer. And we've housed, I don't know how many people, but I think about 60 in the past 8 months or so. But that's, you know, you have to have a place to start. And the people who have too much stuff, they can't even get inside, meaning their name's not even in the system oftentimes.
So if I have, say, a suitcase full of belongings that I really want to hang on to, and I'm on the street, I might be able to get into some kind of shelter, but getting into that shelter, they might not let me keep the entire suitcase of things?
One suitcase would usually be tolerable. You know, there are a lot of people with mobility issues and stuff too. They've got too much stuff. They can't get down the stairs. Getting them back out in the morning is a challenge as well. So we have to operate in a way that allows the staff to get home and go to bed. Otherwise, they're not going to make it the next day. So there are a lot of different challenges that are provided by having too much stuff. And it's for the people on the street. It's for the staff. It's even the facilities themselves oftentimes aren't big enough, or you can't have that much stuff come into the area where we're serving food. There are so many different problems that are presented by it. And I think, yeah, again, the need for more storage allows people to access healthcare, social supports. They can, you know, sit in a warm place and watch a movie and chat with their friends. And the people on the streets that have too much stuff, living out of shopping carts, for example, nobody's able to accommodate that. And the impacts on mental health then are transferred to impacts on physical health. And they're just insurmountable problems when we allow it to grow.
What then is the pathway to addressing that kind of thing?
As a simple service like the one we had, it can help on the short-term impacts that we had on people's lives. But I think we need to create something along those lines, a storage facility that people can continue to use for weeks, months. And then we have to just let it ride out. We oftentimes start pilot projects you know, it doesn't solve the problem immediately and we abandon them. This is a marathon that we're working in. You know, we're not just going to get everybody housed and solve the problem and it's just going to go away. We're trying to create relationships with people. We're trying to help our entire community. So I would think a few of these facilities across town would be much more manageable than just having everybody down on Pandora. People don't really like to hear that, but the truth is the problem is there regardless of what we do. So we're trying to offer solutions and get people housed one at a time. And this is a huge part in creating stability and allowing a person to rest and then gather themselves and move forward.
If someone is listening and they're wondering, in a situation where someone's belongings are almost sort of like chaining them to a situation where they can't access services, and they're wondering why that is, why wouldn't they leave some of the belongings behind? What can you say?
To be honest with you, as someone that lived out on the streets, when you have nothing and you have the opportunity to get something, it's scary to let it pass and you could grab onto it. It's a part of our comfort. It's a part of our mental health. It feels intrusive to have somebody suggest that you get rid of your stuff. So I don't even know how to describe this, but it almost becomes a part of our being, and we need it for comfort. So it's scary. And, you know, I understand because I've seen how much better someone's life can get if they are able to let go of some of their stuff. But it's really difficult to get that across in conversation. And it's scary when you're in it and it feels like a part of your home.
Have there ever been situations where, say, like trust is eroded between a service provider or, say, like people working on behalf of the city, where stuff is at the focal point, like people's stuff is maybe thrown out without their knowledge, that kind of thing that you're aware of?
Yes, that's a very regular occurrence. And I get it. You know, to be honest with you, the stuff builds up, and bylaws in a very difficult spot because they're never satisfying the business owners and residents, but they're also, you know, trying to keep the streets clean. So the people on the sidewalk are mad at them and the neighbors are mad at them, and they're doing their best. So I fully understand that. But sometimes, yes, that does happen. People go across the street to Subway or something and they come back and their tent is gone. That's a story that I've been hearing for as long as I've been working in this area. It happens all too regularly, I think. But at the same time, again, I don't blame bylaw. If you allow the problem just to grow, it's overwhelming. So we have to find an actual solution and move forward here.
Are there any maybe potential solutions? Are there any irons on the fire? Anything that Solid is looking at and can see maybe like this is a space where we could create something like we had before?
Well, we had been talking about it. We have another facility that's set to open soon. And we just agreed as a group that we were kind of maxed out. So we stopped pursuing that for a brief period. But there are a number of different things that we talk about weekly or monthly that we need to move into in the future. As soon as we get everything smoothed out with the new facility, we go back to the same initiatives we were pushing before. So we were maxed out in terms of resources for a brief period, right at the closure of the previous storage. But the success that we saw there, we met all of the targets. You know, we usually within 24 hours, when I said we need to get 20 people in there by this date, we're going to be up to 30 by the following week. We hit all the targets. We were seeing the people every day. It went exactly as we drew it on paper to begin with. And we didn't know how to do that on day one. So we now have the knowledge as to how to do it. And the need is there at least 3, maybe even 5 times that facility. If it was across town, we would see immediate impacts on neighborhoods across the whole city.
So there were people who were able to fill up a locker with things and have that kind of security to know they could go somewhere, do whatever, they didn't have to haul it all around. And maybe even that gave them the capacity to, say, stay in a shelter and then get onto a list and get onto a track where they could ultimately find somewhere to be in a part, in a large part, all because of the storage locker?
Yeah. And just to sum up all of that, it's very difficult to make changes when you can't imagine life being any different. And this allows people to stop and gather their wits. It allows them to see life beyond the block. And it wasn't open for long enough to see how big that impact would be. You know, it's such a simple service, and it's something that we all take for granted. But again, you can't make changes if you can't imagine life different. And it's a big part of life on the street.
Fred Cameron is part of the senior management team at Solid Outreach in Victoria.
People First Radio, People First Media, and People First Stories are community media projects of Vancouver Island Mental Health Society and are produced in Nanaimo, British Columbia. The opinions expressed do not necessarily represent the views of Vancouver Island Mental Health Society or its broadcast, podcast, and social media partners.